For all the shit with AndTheValleyShook.com, it's the Go Show, the original LSU podcast coming to you via the Talk Show airwaves. You're listening to us on a Wednesday. It should be a Wednesday night or a Thursday night, depending on how quickly podcast gets it out to you folks. But this is the Go Show, the original LSU podcast, and for all the shit with AndTheValleyShook.com. I mentioned that already. Ways to get in touch with us, you can go to the website. It's AndTheValleyShook.com. If you don't know it by now, you need to learn it. It's AND. TheValleyShook.com. You can email the show, goshow@gmail.com. That's always been the same, GAUX SHOW, or nsf@gmail.com. And you can also go to Facebook and become our friend. Become part of the growing Facebook Go Show phenomenon that is gaining at least 3 fans per week. Pretty constant. So I think that's pretty high quarters up there here lately, since I've been pumping it every week on a show. We've been gaining at least 3 every week, so pretty soon we'll be up to like 62.
You know, that's because I bought 2 extra computers. There you go.
So with me tonight, we have a three-ring circus, if you will. We got Pose out in Dallas, Texas tonight. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. How's it going, guys?
Good. You got any Ranger games we need to be wary of, or your wife's
No, we have clinched. No, I have my playoff tickets. A couple Saturdays from now, hopefully Florida will be a day game. And so if Florida's a day game, then I can go to the Rangers game at night without any conflict. Otherwise, my DVR will be going, for I'm going to playoff baseball.
What's going on in this Florida game? I guess they're waiting until next week to
they're waiting for the results of who wins Alabama-Florida. So.
Gotcha. Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. And over there, just 25 miles to my west, in Ponchatoula, Louisiana, Mr. Patrick Morris.
What's happening?
Nothing, man. How you doing?
Night here. Hey, I got a question for Poser there. He's hitting in Dallas. How's that whole UT's going to pot lately right down there?
All right, there is nothing better.
They got a big shooting today?
There is nothing better than UT fans whining over a loss.
Is that what happened with that shooting?
Yeah, it probably was. A guy just couldn't handle it and took his own life. And, yes, too soon. But, man, UT fans, I honestly never had a problem with Texas until I moved to Texas, and now I understand what A&M fans are talking about, so I'm all about rooting for Texas to lose. It's great.
To empathize with A&M fans, that's got to be pretty incredible. I got to tip my hat to you, because for the longest time.
I like A&M fans because I admire their tenacity. They're fanatical. You know, they show up in droves. They understand they're a cult. And honestly, we're a cult, too. And we're winning right now, so it doesn't seem as ridiculous. But from the outside, every cult is ridiculous. And I actually kind of like A&M. They have a sense of humor right now because they're losing. And
gotcha.
We can sit together and laugh at Texas fans together. So
I got you. Well, speaking of, on the show tonight, of course, you're going to get a synopsis, a breakdown of the LSU-West Virginia game, and my apologies, kind of going in. I haven't really been online too much since Saturday. But I know on the website, I know those of you and Paul and Billy have been breaking it down, podcast as well, and I hadn't really read too much about what's going on in there. So if you want to get into any kind of detail about what you've written about so far, that's fine. We can kind of dive into that later on, but as we kind of talk about West Virginia and whatnot. Patrick, I want to start off, and I guess I should start off with, LSU, West Virginia, 20-14, LSU wins it, now 4-0, and it's basically the same, it's the same thing as it's been since week one. Offense struggling, defense playing good, more of the same, but it's gotten worse now. Granted, probably play a little bit better of a team. Well, we did play a better team. We played a top 25 team. We beat them. Spread was, I think, 6.5 or 7. We beat them by 6. So, whatever. With a decent offensive performance, even a mediocre offensive performance, we win this game by 2-plus touchdowns. So, not a lot to be, other than offense, really not a lot to be really mad about. It's, we kind of know where we are as an offense. We know what kind of needs to, We all have our theories on what needs to be done. So, for the most part, it was a solid game. Defensively it was outstanding. I'm looking at the stats right now. West Virginia 177. That's still a potent offense there.
As bad as our as bad as our offense was, we still outgained West Virginia. I will say this was a little bit different. This goes back to the North Carolina game where the team lost focus in the second half. And to me, that's one of the bigger irritants. Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, in the second half, LSU put their foot on the other team's throat and kind of drove over them and ended up winning by 20 points. Against North Carolina, they have a 20-point lead, kind of lost their focus, and almost lost the game because they just almost stopped playing. It was the same thing against West Virginia. They took a 17-point lead, the game looked over, started to coast, and led a team back in the game that had no business being in the game. And as mad as I get about the offense and as terrible as Jordan Jefferson looked, really, if you want to talk about the number one problem, it's still letting teams back in the game, losing focus. And that's the unforgivable kind of sin, because you can forgive athletic errors, but mental errors just drive me insane.
Yeah, well, and let's look at that. Go ahead, Pat. I'm sorry.
I don't think it's much a matter of losing focus, as the offense never had a focus in this game. I mean, think about it. Where do we do our scoring for the most part? You know, on a short field and on a Patrick Peterson's turn. I mean, that was the focus. Hell, the defense was in it the whole game. That's why West Virginia didn't score. If they're on a, you know, another team like as potent as West Virginia has that much opportunity, they're going to score eventually. But to hold them only two touchdowns, or, you know, to hold them to what we did, that, you know, that's a great performance for the defense. They had it the whole game. Special teams, heck, they were there the whole game. The punt coverage, everything else. It was the offense that never even showed up with a focus. That's what's more disturbing is if they started and then stopped, that'd be a different thing. They don't even show up.
Well, I think they did show up. If you watch that first drive, if you watch on tape, if you still have it on your DVR, Jordan Jefferson looked good in that first drive. They were moving the chains. His first pass, I think, was a 9-yard out route. They made a couple good runs. They're driving down the field. Jefferson stepped up in the pocket. He looked poised. He looked confident. And then he throws the ball to Tolliver, bounces off his hands, interception. And it was just like it all collapsed at the first sign of adversity. I mean, it was like he was pretending to be confident, trying to put up a brave face. And as soon as there was one small chink in the armor, he threw in the towel. And he just went and had, I mean, as much as we talked about how bad the Vanderbilt game was, this was worse. This was one of the worst quarterbacking performances I have ever seen an LSU quarterback have outside of Melvin Hill in the Purple Pants game. This was terrible.
Well, outside of Jamie Howard throwing the interceptions against Auburn.
No, I mean, I think this was worse. Jamie Howard at least threw for like 300 yards in that game. And this was, he couldn't do anything after that first drive.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
think
right.
About the first drives in most games, though. First drives in most games are all pre-scripted, preset. He knows exactly what he's doing for about the first 10 plays. So, I mean, you can kind of give him – he doesn't have to think too much in those. He's probably been through those 10 plays, you know, 10 times throughout the week, so he knows exactly where he's got to go, where he's looking, what they're going to do. Once you get beyond that and defense starts making adjustments, you start making adjustments, that's where it goes downhill for Jefferson.
Well, and honestly, I think it really was the pick. Because it was even like the little things, like how he stepped up in the pocket. It looked like he was making good decisions on the fly, not just calling the plays and knowing where the receivers are going to be, but just avoiding the rush. And then after the first drive, it was just like he lost everything. That interception just took it all out of all the air out of the balloon. And which is weird because last year Jefferson was a very mediocre quarterback. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great. But he did a couple things very well. He was the classic game manager. He moved the sticks fairly well. He was decent back there, and he didn't turn the ball over. This year, he's throwing for a much lower completion percentage. He's getting a lot less yards per attempt and yards per completion. And on top of that, he is turning the ball over all the time. So I don't know what he does well anymore. The things that he used to do well have now evaporated from his game. He's not doing anything well.
I just think nobody in the offense has confidence in anybody else in the offense. I mean, it's whether it's, you know, Jordan Jefferson losing confidence in the receivers for dropping balls or the receivers losing confidence in Jefferson for not being able to get them the ball like we saw in the Vanderbilt game. And like you said, Poser, it's, you know, we're moving the ball along pretty well. He completes that, and Terrence Tolliver catches that pass. I think it's probably, what, a first and goal? I don't know if it was that deep. But
it was like the 15 or 20, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he but you're looking at Tarasenko's, you know, pretty good after the catch at times. You know, it's not without a rim. It's not without the rim of expectation that we could have been a first and goal. But yeah, definitely inside the 20, definitely in the red zone. So, you know, but he needs to. But Jordan Jefferson needs to show some more moxie and be able to bounce back from that. I mean, that's why he's not a good quarterback, and that's why we are where we are as an offense right now. That's why he hasn't shown improvement from where he was, what we saw in the Arkansas and Georgia Tech game back in 2008, to what we saw last year, to what we're seeing this year. And that's
improving, it's that he's regressing, and he's regressing horribly. Because he used to do a lot of things very good. I think the big thing was, like, I think last year he completed about 60% of his passes.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's just everything that he used to do well, he no longer does well, and he's added turnovers to the. It's just a disaster right now, which of course goes into the do we start Lee conversation.
Right, and that's something we can definitely get into. I don't want to make this show the do we start Jared Lee against Tennessee episode, but definitely we're gonna get into that. I mean, coming out of this game, you know, big win for LSU. Now we're getting to the real thick of things when the SEC schedule now. We have McNeese State sandwiched in, you know, a lot of SEC games now. And, you know, now, I mean, I honestly think you brought it up, Moses. I'm going to go ahead and give my opinion on this. I honestly think that this is the game where I think we need to start generally, because I'm very convinced that we can beat Tennessee on special teams and defense alone. Tennessee is not a very good football team, and I don't think we need to play Jared Lee in the middle of the third quarter when we're up 28-3, you know, assuming we score 28 points, because I don't think we will. But you get what I'm saying. If it's like 20 kicks or something like that, I don't think he needs to come in then. I think he needs to start. If he comes out in the first couple of series and we lay eggs on offense, fine. Go back to Jordan Jefferson. We know we have good defense. We know we have good special teams. That's going to put us in some good situations, and I think we're going to be able to run the ball against Tennessee pretty well too. So,
They already said he's going to start Jefferson. But starting is a nebulous concept. I mean, it's not nebulous, but a lot of times a player starts and then plays one series and then he's out for the rest of the game. And we might see something along – just because you're not starting does not mean you will not see significant action. And I think the thing with Jefferson, and this is the reason why I think Miles has not taken Jefferson out, mainly – Jefferson's confidence is so fragile right now. I think if he gets benched, that's it. He's never coming back. And I think Miles knows this. I think he knows his players better than we do. And he's trying to do whatever he can to protect his player, because he doesn't have confidence in Lee either. Because last time we saw Lee, he was stinking up the joint against Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, you're very right. So.
And so once he goes to Lee, I don't think he can put Lee in for a few series, and if it doesn't work, go back to Jefferson. I think that'll shatter Jefferson. And then you're left, with Bailey? Or do we put Chet back there and just, you know, run the Wildcat? I can understand why
he's... What you got to say about Lee, though, is at least, you know, we're talking about the stability of the mind, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Is Jefferson, you know, I get the feeling, same thing you do. He's going to pout and cry, and he is cooked if he comes out. He is not going to be able to do anything. He's going to shut it down totally. He's going to be just – because he was always a star athlete in high school. He was a starting quarterback at LSU. This will be the first time in his life, so to speak, that he's got to face this kind of adversity and say that, I'm not the guy anymore. You know, you're right. I think he's the kind of guy – you look at his mannerisms, you look at the way he talks in press conferences, he's going to shut it down. You are absolutely right there. He'll shut it down. That's the one reason – That's the one thing about Leo. Like, he's been down, been up, been down, been up. But you know what? He's still there trying his best.
No, and I love that about Lee. Lee is a guy who I think could have transferred, maybe even should have transferred, but he stuck it out, and that shows incredible character on his part. And I'm a big fan of Jarrett Lee just for that. And remember, fans were just as vicious towards Jarrett Lee 2 years ago as they're being towards Jefferson now. I mean, the same people who are booing Jefferson and calling Lee the savior are the same people who hated Lee's guts.
He won Jordan Jefferson's
and wanted Jordy Jefferson to play.
Yeah.
What I like
think
about
he's the savior, but we just want something better than what we're seeing in any
time.
Yeah,
I think
good.
My thing is, I think at this point it can't get worse, and I know that's a terrible reason to make a decision, but Jordan Jefferson couldn't do anything against West Virginia. I'm willing to let Vanderbilt slide. Everyone's entitled to a bad game. Then against Mississippi State, we had a very conservative game plan, so we just didn't pass for a whole lot of yards because we didn't need to. Then comes West Virginia. It's now been two games where he's had bad performances, one more by game plan, and he was even worse. And to me, that's the time when you're just when you say this is not working. And I think you put him out there for the first series, and if you don't get results in that first series, I want to see Jarrett Lee. First series, I mean, maybe the second series, maybe the second quarter, but that's about how early I want to see Lee if Jefferson's not performing. This is literally his last chance.
Are you going to be like probably most 90% of the people in that stadium and boo if Jefferson does bad calling for Lee?
No, I'm pretty much against booing college kids. I understand that you have the right to boo if you buy your ticket. I'm not going to tell you what to do. But at the same time, just because you have the freedom of speech to boo, I have the freedom of choice to think you're a jackass. So I'm not going to be happy, and I'll probably groan audibly, but I will not boo Jefferson.
Well, are you really just yelling it at Jefferson, or are you yelling it at just the decisions altogether with what the coaching staff's doing? Because if they're getting paid for that, then, yeah, I agree. They should be – I mean, hell, somebody needs to have a sit-down with them. Oliva needs to take them on the side and say, look, if you can't realize what's happening in this stadium, let me play a tape for what's going on. It's not necessarily the players, I mean, that are getting booed. And, yeah, I know the performance is not good and they're not happy with the performance, but it's more the coaching decisions that I think is the problem there, because you got a guy, you're pulling one in, pulling one out, doing this, doing that, bad play calling. That, to me, is the problem. That, to me, is where I would come from with the displeasure.
Yeah, it depends on how – when you're a player, I think you can't distinguish between if they're booing the players or booing the coaches. It's all the same. So I'm just kind of against the idea of booing the players. And I know people can say in their mind, hey, I'm booing the coaches. The players don't feel that way. When Jefferson walks out there and he's getting booed because of the decision to put him in, you're booing Jefferson. And I think we should just be honest with ourselves. And so I just don't want to do it. On the flip side, I am not the god of fandom. If you want to go out and boo, it's not my place to tell you not to do it. I mean, I can tell you I don't think you should, but you don't have to listen to me. I'm just some guy.
Yeah, the one thing I was – I don't think I boo in the stadium. Pat, do I boo in the stadium? Because I can't remember.
Yeah, you had a little rumbling there.
I rumbled. I didn't boo. I don't think I booed.
Yeah, no,
what
I understand.
What I didn't understand was why is he putting in Jarrett Lee with 6 minutes to play with the game on the line?
Why are you putting him in one series and pull him out?
Yeah, that right there didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. And then the fact that he had his helmet on, ready to go after Jefferson threw the interception when the score was 17-14, and then Jordan Jefferson goes right back on the field, and he said, okay, it's kind of like you're holding you got the double ball of strength, you're holding it out for him, and all of a sudden you're pulling it back, and
I think
is Jarrett Lee showing him up? I mean, we don't know.
I personally think
he was told he was going in. I mean, I don't think Lee was showing him up, but I mean, that is a possibility. We can't say he was definitely told he's going in. Or he could have been told, hey, Lee, get ready. He gets ready, and then when he reports to the coach, he says, no, we're going to stick with Jefferson, which is different than being told you're going in and then getting pulled. We haven't heard from Lee, so we have no idea what was actually said to him.
Right.
Anybody know him? Anybody out there on the show? Can we get a comment from him?
Yeah. We love you, Jarrett. that's pretty much my opinions on the quarterback. That's about as far as I want to go into it. There's really not a whole lot of – it's now a waiting game. I think we all want to see Lee, but at the same time, we want Jefferson to succeed. I don't think anybody's saying
– to succeed.
Yeah,
but honestly, I'd rather see Lee. At this point, you almost want to see Yeah, everybody in the stadium is rooting for Lee. Now that the dust has settled from 2 years ago and whatnot, they're rooting for him to do good because he's been through the turmoil before and he stuck it out. And so you almost have a beat for him, say, come on, please let this guy do good just because he's been through it.
Yeah, that's true. And also it'll make us feel better because, you know, we were the ones who booed him. The fan saying, I hope he, you know, can get through this adversity. Who caused that adversity in the first place? It's, you know, makes us feel better. It's like, see, we turned him into this great player. And
yeah.
I don't think Lee's going to come out there and become Johnny Unitas.
No.
What I want him to do is go out there and become Bruce Gutkowski. I mean, just a guy who can keep the lights on.
I just want production out of the offense because, I mean, let's face it, we get any type of production out of this offense. I mean, the sky is the limit for this football team right now. I mean, it's, you know,
man,
and this isn't just Homer talking. I mean, this is, I mean, we've seen this, but we've seen this defense play four games now, and, you know, we can say, okay, it was against Vandy, it was against Mississippi State, but they played a legitimate, a very good offense Saturday night, and they fly around to the ball. They all have noses for the football. I mean, it's just, you know, and they're very opportunistic. I mean, we're getting turnovers like, you know, I've never seen before in LSU defense in the last few years. So,
I'll let you take this one. But
I said that's why they're 10-12 in the country because of the defense and special teams. That's it.
Right.
You know, because everybody in the country, it's not just down here that people are saying the offense stinks. I mean, you listen to the national shows, you know, at lunch every now and then I'll catch some of those national guys when I'm out and about. And, man, they're talking about, man, this LSU team, God, if they could ever just get it straight on offense, they would be just in the top five without a doubt, you know. But everybody's still, you know, no, there's a respect, but there's no respect. We're there by default right now.
Our defense is 2003 good. I mean, this is an incredible unit. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu fell down and got up in time and almost made a play on that last touchdown.
It was the first touchdown. He fell down. I didn't realize.
He fell down and got up in time and was actually there for the coverage. He actually provided fairly decent coverage despite the fact he fell down on a play that started at the 2-yard line. That's how good he is. And
yeah,
he's our bad cornerback. I mean, like, that's how good this team. I mean, they can do. I mean, up front, there's just so many players. I mean, Barkevious Mingo is everywhere. Sam Montgomery is just playing great. Drake Nevis has quiet game, but I mean, he's a force. The linebackers, we just keep coming at you. This is
Kelvin Shepard's out Patrick Willis. I mean, he is unbelievable. He's all over the field.
I love that guy.
Kelvin
Shepard.
Yeah, go ahead.
Where I'm going to go with my super high praise. Kelvin Shepard is probably the best LSU linebacker since Michael Brooks. That's how good he is. He is amazing.
A lot.
Yeah, he's not as good as Michael Brooks.
Yeah.
Michael Brooks is better. But
yeah, Michael Brooks.
I mean, I'm putting him ahead of Spears. I think this guy is just incredible. And he's the guy who holds it all together. I honestly think as great as Peterson is, if Shepard got hurt, he's our one irreplaceable player.
I gotta agree with that because we have a lot of parts we can plug in on a second in the secondary, and Shepard goes down, you got some guys you can plug in, but
we don't have another middle linebacker.
Right, exactly.
So Shepard, you're Sam Mills, he's your Ray Lewis, he's your guy.
He is. I mean, he is our Ray Lewis, and you know, I'm from Baltimore, so I try and watch the Ravens every week, and I'm pretty familiar with Ray Lewis's work. He's not quite Ray Lewis levels, but it's not embarrassing to talk about him as our Ray Lewis.
No,
and he is that
all,
good.
Not at all. Not at all. And Patrick already knows about my bromance I had with Tyrann Mathieu. He's just, I love that guy.
Mateo is just like, he's just like
Yeah, we've nicknamed him Mateo. And I think that comes from I think it comes from Podcat, who mispronounced his name and gets him when we're wet. Past I was watching the North Carolina game. Somebody pronounced his name wrong in the house, and I can't remember who it was. And said Mateo, and it just stuck. So every time he makes a play on the field, I yell his name. I yell out Mateo.
We've been going with Tyrannosaurus Rex, for obvious reasons. We can also try Mateo.
At
Anne the Valley Shook, where we're definitely big on player nicknames, the one that's really caught wildfire is Neil before Zod for Patrick Peterson. if I ever see someone holding up a Neil Before Zod picture in the stadium, I'm putting it on my Christmas cards. he is the villain from Superman 2. He is that good. He is not a superhero. He is a supervillain. And
if we could just keep water in his body, it'd be even better.
I
he has no body fat's his problem. He has no freaking body fat, and that's why he cramps up all the time.
I can't believe people want him to play on offense when he can barely make it through a game on defense and special teams. I mean, I understand the desire to have him play, but at the same time, he obviously can't do it. This guy needs to hydrate. He's amazing. I mean, every week you just watch him play, and you know he's going pro at the end of the year. I mean,
he's top three. He's top three right now.
The only way he stays in school is if there's an NFL strike that looks like it will never end. And even then, he might go pro. He is so good. And it's just a pleasure to watch him. Those games.
Yeah, and I want to take a 15-yard penalty every week that he scores a touchdown. If he does that close every week.
Totally fine.
He needs to work on the pose. He was off a little bit.
It was a quick.
He was. Yeah, the arm down. It needs to be up. You know.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, where the cameraman was, he was actually giving a stiff arm to the cameraman, who, of course, was low because he was kneeling before Zod.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, he was. I'm willing to take a 15-yard penalty every week, and
to thank my wife for making me go down and get her something to eat when he returned the punt.
No, you don't leave for punt returns. Have you learned nothing?
Oh no,
I mean,
don't understand. Nope. I'll let my wife sit next to you next game.
All right. I will go during our offensive series. I mean, that's. I would say, honey, I will wait until after the punt return, and then I'll miss the offensive series and get you something to eat.
There you go. Patrick needs to learn.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Gary. Yeah, you were sitting there. Thank you.
I didn't leave. I didn't have to get up and get her anything.
All right. Well, next time you will. Anyway, back to the man.
Okay.
Well, I don't know, Kerry. This is your cue, buddy.
Why is it my cue? I mean, what else do you want me to say about him?
Well, there's not much more else you can say about him.
Let's pull out the bright spots. I kind of feel like, what was his name? Ogilvy and Bedens Bears. When he pulls out the stats after their second loss,
and
points out all the good things about the game. Number one, we outgained them, 230 yards to 177. We outsnapped them 59-58. This is groundbreaking.
Oh, we almost made.
No, we did that against Mississippi State as well. I thought we outsnapped them.
Oh,
as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think we've done it twice now. You know,
all right,
it was either Mississippi State or Vandy.
We're on a roll.
So,
and still 150 rushing yards on 36 rushing attempts, 4 yards a carry. You can't ask for much more to compliment a passing game, which we don't have. So, but 12 penalties, we look like the Green Bay Packers last night on Monday Night Football with all the penalties. And
we had more penalty yards than – I think it was – we had more penalty yards than either team had passing yards,
right,
and more penalty yards than they had rushing yards.
That's correct. Well, that's easy.
125 or something? Yeah, something
they
crazy.
Only had – they only we had 120 penalty yards. They only ran for 58. I don't know about Devine's numbers, but I think it was like 37 yards rushing.
He got hurt a little bit
during the game. Yeah, he got hurt during the game. I don't care. We hurt him.
He wouldn't have gotten through. I mean, there was nowhere to run. I mean, that was not on Devine. I mean, they handed the ball off to him, and Mingo was already in the backfield almost every time.
Yeah.
It was just a great performance. I mean, we got the interception, special teams yards once again. I think we averaged, I think it was close to like 30 yards a return because of Peterson's big return. We ran the ball well. We did everything a football team can do. We did well except pass the ball.
Right.
That's how close this team is to being great. I don't mean we're close to being a 10-2 team that, you know, might finish in the lower half of the top 10, you know, if we're lucky. If we can find a competent quarterback, this team is good enough to run the table. They are that good. The defense is amazing. I think we have the best special teams in the country. We're not even talking about Jasper, who's just an amazing kicker. And we have a great punt game. We have great punt coverage. We have good kickoff returns. Ridley is a beast. This is a team that can do almost anything. except throw the ball.
Yeah.
Which is, you know,
and I
other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play?
Yeah, and this is a little sidebar. I posted this question, I think on Facebook, it was like a status update. I said, what if we gave Josh Jasper to the Saints on Sundays in return for Chase Daniel on Saturdays?
Yeah.
Chase Daniel can run this offense real quick for us on a Saturday and go play some NFL, back up Drew Brees on a Sunday. I think it's a fair trade.
You throw that Danny Werfel out pattern.
Yeah.
And I mean, and this is a team that does not need
Chase
Daniel. I mean, and Chase Daniel was a great college player.
Yeah.
We don't need Chase Daniel. I mean, this is a team that just needs, it needs Matt Mauk. And it's just, I think that's the most frustrating thing. And I think that's where the booing is coming from. I think that's why LSU fans are frustrated. It's not because this is a frustrating team that isn't very good. It's because people can see that this team could be great. And it's just one position holding us back. And that's hard to say because you don't want to single a kid out. I mean, Jefferson seems like a nice enough kid. He's 20 years old. You know, I don't think he's ever done anything bad. And to say this is a great team except for you is a really mean thing to say. But that's pretty much the root of the analysis. This is a great team except for the quarterback.
Well, I mean, they say they don't hear it is crap because they hear it every day. Hell, they got to hear it from their school newspaper, from the Advocate, from the TV news, from the internet, from all the national pundits. They got to read, they read about the team because, they're trying to read about themselves. And
of course they are.
Negative about him,
Yeah, they know.
For the fact that, Miles always comes in with his stupid comments at press conferences, doing this, that guy at coffee pot, the whole,
I did love the coffee pot.
His players freaking, hear more about this stuff than Miles probably gives them or gives anybody. Miles is just trying to that's what I can't stand about Miles. Just say what it is sometimes. Are you mad at the fans? You ask the fans, don't boo because I don't think it's right. But don't say, I'm a fan. I hate myself. I hate my wife. I hate this. That's crap. That's just crap.
I thought the coffee pot story was really funny. Someone complaining about the coffee that he didn't make. I thought that was a great analogy. He went too far when he started talking about the guy who doesn't like his wife. I thought that was taking it a little bit too much. But the coffee pot, I think he's got a point. It's like, here, we made you a delicious pot. We're in the office. I made you the pot of coffee, and you're complaining about it? We're 4-0. I mean, a little bit of gratitude would be nice. And honestly, the oldest trick in the coach's handbook is us against them. I mean, that no one believes in us. That is every coach in the world. And sometimes the them is the fans. And if it rallies the team, if he says no one believes in us, our own fans don't believe in us, and that makes them play better, then I'm fine with it. The thing is, they have to play better.
Kind of hard to say the fans don't believe in them, though, when they show up to every game and there's 94,000 people sitting in that stadium, cheering on if they do
something
great.
The thing is, it doesn't matter if we believe in them or not. They just have to believe that we don't.
Miles, he just doesn't come off as a believable person when it comes to those type of things. It's like you can see right – if we're sitting here from the outside and we're looking at that and saying, oh, God, you can see right through that crap, he's just – well, crap. Well, what are the players saying when they hear press conferences like that? Or, I sure hope to God he's a totally different person in the locker room, because when you hear stuff like that as a fan, you're like, this guy's just so fake, it's unreal.
See, and I thought I actually liked the comments. I think that showed Miles as legitimately hurt and pissed off. I think that showed genuine anger. He does need to turn it into something, but his actual comments – I think he is angry at the fans. I think he wanted to come out there and say, this is crap. Why are you guys booing? I mean, we're winning. We're one of the best teams in the country, and one guy's playing bad, and you're going to blame and you're saying that everything is crap. And I'm sure he's aware of everything that's being said as well. And some of the overreaction is, it's unbelievable. Some of the criticism of this team is just, like, he can't do anything. People are talking about this team like it's barely going to make the Independence Bowl. And that's not true. This is a very good football team. And I think that anger is genuine.
Well, talent-wise, it is a very good football team. There's no doubt about that. They have the ability. They have the talent. but they got to find that extra something. And they, you know, before we're getting to the big boys, so we're really about to find out the character of this team. That's what we're.
I think that's the big thing is we're going to find out what this team is made of. Probably not this week, but
next week when we play Florida. Sure, the week after, yeah.
You
know, there's no more excuses. I think the Florida game is the game where you find out, you know, that's big boy time. And that's how I kind of want to see Lee out there for a while because, if nothing else, it shows another option.
And another reason we need to have Lee out there is we go play Florida. You know what? They ain't going to hit us lightly. If they try to run that option, one of them linebackers from Florida, they got a lot of speed on defense. He could get knocked in a heartbeat, and we're going to come in with a cold quarterback that hadn't played much this year yet. That's another thing I'm scared of. We need to play the other quarterback.
No, I agree with that. And honestly, one of the big reasons I have for wanting to bench Jefferson is that we stop calling quarterback runs. Ridley is so good that every time we run the quarterback, that's taking a carry away from a guy who's averaging 5 yards a carry.
From a guy that can wait out of defense. More so than Jordan Jefferson running an option off the end. You know, that's another thing that I don't want to get into too much of. The offensive play call, and aside from the horrible passing game that we have, but I still see the same. They're still trying all these little goofy wrinkles and things like that. Line that ball up in power eye and run Steven Ridley. Bring in
honestly,
change of pace. Bring in Spencer.
That's
Webber.
Why I liked that 6 yard drive that took 4 plays, scored a touchdown. Was my favorite drive of the season because we didn't get cute. We got the ball on the 6, and it was just 4 straight ahead runs. Nothing fancy. Nothing. We knew that West Virginia couldn't stop us in 4 plays.
Mm-hmm.
And every play gained about a yard or two, and then we were in the end zone. I think it was just it was the kind of play calling that we've been missing. It wasn't cute. You know, no one's ever going to give you an award for that, but it knew what our strength was, and we just pounded them because West Virginia knew it was coming and couldn't stop it. Just line up there, smash mouth football, run it down their throats, and – that's really, I think that's going to become our identity. I mean, if you watch the UCLA-Texas game, UCLA, I think, only threw the ball like 9 times or something crazy. I mean, if you're good at running.
I can pull it up real quick.
It was a very small number. And one of the things is you can run the ball, just keep running it. With a great defense and incredible special teams, we are not relying on this offense to put up 30 points a game. We need it to score 14. And – honestly, if we have another game where Jasper kicks 5 field goals, I'm happy with that because there are not many teams that are going to score more than 14 points against this defense.
No, I believe you're right. I believe you're absolutely correct. I mean, and, you know, if we can just get a team, even bad offensive teams, find a way to muster up at least one good touchdown drive a game, you know, more oftentimes than not. If we can even just get that and our special teams set us up, you know, inside the 20 or defenses set us up inside the opponent's 20 to score a quick little cheap touchdown, that's going to be good enough to win. I mean, you're absolutely right. I'm absolutely convinced that 14 to 20, I think 14 to 20 offensive points a game, we're in pretty good shape.
This team has scored more than 20 points in every game. I mean, as bad as the offensive rankings are, the scoring offense is doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't done it and they haven't had any directional schools to pad the stats. I mean, this is a team – that's scoring about 25 points a game, and that's pretty good offense. It's not, you know, not award winning, but it's definitely, if you have one of the best defenses in the country, that is good enough.
Right.
But what are we ranked offensively now coming out of this week? Did I podcast you edit that?
I can hold on a second.
Yeah, we can hold on. Let's see.
Yeah,
I know Texas is like 77 because I heard that today because I was listening to that crap.
The wrong.
And you know, but honestly, remember. We haven't played any schools that pad our stats yet. I mean, almost everyone else – actually, everyone else has played a non-AQ school. You know, LSU is the only school to have played 4 BCS conference teams.
Yeah, I don't have the overall offensive ranking, but we're 115th in passing, which are pretty much new. Everybody,
yeah.
You know, pretty much new. 35th in rushing, so I guess you average that out. You're looking at 75, 80. Yeah, so
yeah. –
points for 65th, and of course points against were 5th because we're only giving up 12 points a game. So, and that's with a 24-point performance by North Carolina. So, that's pretty solid.
But you know, that's pretty much the gist of it. As far as I don't have an overall offensive ranking. I got it on ESPN.com right now.
Hold on, check out. Yeah, you guys keep talking. I can look it up while I.
Well, thanks for talking. I forgot to introduce podcast at the top of the show. The PF Four Count, pushing the button
behind.
I don't know. But let's
here we go. Total offense, we're ranked 102 in the country.
Okay. Wow.
And that's in yardage. But in scoring, and LSU, if I can find us on this list, you would think LSU would is 65th, averaging 26.5. And a lot of that is because of field position. So
The stats I'm looking at against Tennessee, I'm looking at right now, that's updated from West Virginia, but I didn't realize we were averaging 190 yards rushing a game. And that's,
this team can run the ball. We don't need the passing game to be ranked top 20. In fact, Alabama won the national title last year, and their passing offense was just as bad as ours was last year.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the teams that LSU was clustered near last year in passing offense, it was Nebraska, Alabama, Virginia Tech, teams that won their conferences. You do not need a great passing game in college to win. It helps if it's
right.
Mediocre.
You're right. And, on that note, let's switch gears. Let's talk quickly about Tennessee. Of course, again, full Tennessee preview coming up Saturday as we stream live, 2:30 game, CBS. We're gonna be streaming live from what is it, Patrick? What did your wife say? Team Cat Party Headquarters. I don't want to be redundant.
Yes, Team Cat Party Headquarters.
If I say Team Cat Tailgating Headquarters, I'm repeating myself because technically KATT has tailgating already in it. So Team Cat Party Headquarters. Right across from the student union on the parade grounds, right along the sidewalk, about 50
yards. We're going to have to go a little earlier this week because we got an early game.
2:30 game, yeah. We'll probably kick it off about 8:30. Knock it out, be ready to party and everything for about 9:30. Get our quick little 4.5 hours of partying in and be on our way to the game. But real quickly about Tennessee, you look at what Tennessee's done so far this year. UAB took them to overtime, which they did win. Can't really say anything about UAB because they beat us in 2000. So, 2000.
I think Dooley's had a save in this first year. So,
yeah, there you go. Just looking at some of the things they do, they pass the ball a little better than us, obviously.
Some very stiff competition, too. Oregon and Florida are not cheapskates there.
They've played some teams. And also, they're getting Gerald Jones back this week. He's their wide receiver. He's one of the better receivers in the conference, and that's saying something. He's been out. That's going to help their attack. I don't think it's going to dramatically change the team, but I think the real problem with Tennessee is that they don't have any depth. Their starters, they can play with anybody. It's third, fourth quarter, they tend to get worn down.
And that's going to work to LSU's advantage, especially if we can run the ball against them, which I don't have their defensive stats pulled up. That's something we should be able to do. We should be able to wear them down. And I kind of see this game kind of playing out pretty similar to Vandy and Mississippi State, maybe a little bit closer. I mean, Tennessee's still a pretty competitive football team. They were competitive with Florida 2 weeks ago. They lost by 14 to Florida. Oregon blew them out of the park, but that was a close game up until midway through the third quarter, I believe.
It was a game. The score was deceiving.
So,
Tennessee was playing with Oregon.
Yeah, Tennessee's going to come in and be competitive. It's going to be similar to West Virginia, I think, a little bit more in our favor. I think it'll favor kind of halfway in between what Mississippi State and Vandy was and what West Virginia was this past Saturday. So,
my one big concern about this, and this is a historic thing. Tennessee has played LSU tougher than any team that we play. LSU has a worse winning percentage against Tennessee than it does against Alabama.
Yeah,
this is a team
like
that has
27 and 3,
I think is what it is. This is a team that pretty much owns LSU. Let's not pull punches. Tennessee, over the course of this rivalry, has been clearly the better team. And so I will never take a Tennessee team lightly because they have scoreboard on us. So there is no way we should ever walk into a Tennessee game feeling confident.
No.
No, but the only thing you do have to say, I mean, and I'm looking at this, they've played two rough games. They're coming off of a Florida game. They're coming off this. So you're almost hoping that you can catch – I mean, I hate to say it because we should beat them no matter what, man on man, but you're almost hoping they're coming off all these games that they're high emotion at home, doing this, doing that, and that they come into our deal saying, okay, this is the game, the in-between game for them where we can take advantage of that.
Or this is a game where they've thrown in the towel. I mean, they're going to start playing a lot of freshmen up front in the offensive line, and that's the kiss of death. But it could be certain times teams play tough in the beginning of the year, and then when they get bad results, they give up. And you see it all the time. And I think Dooley's a really good coach, and he won't really allow that. But there is an element of human nature where, like, we just got blown out by Oregon, then we got blown out by Florida. Well, not blown out, but we played Florida tough, but they beat us, and now we got to play LSU, really? And I think that's a lot what the UAB game was, a team that's losing its edge.
Yeah, and after us, for whatever it's worth, they're at Georgia, then they host Alabama. So, and they're running a pretty tough gauntlet of teams there. So
they're basically playing four top 10 teams in that 6-week stretch.
They're trying to keep the lights on so they can get to the second half of their season. You know, if they're thinking in their heads, okay, we're going to lose to LSU and we're going to lose to Alabama, but then maybe we can, you know, go 5-1 in the rest of our games and make a bowl. That's what they're thinking.
Yeah, they got to be thinking they should be able to go to Georgia and beat Georgia because Georgia's on the verge. Really, I mean,
speaking of a team that's throwing in the towel. I mean, that was a give up.
We'll go ahead and name the Tennessee Georgia game next week the official throwing the towel game. So, just real quickly about Tennessee, then we'll get into the picks a little bit. This is a game where I just think it's real. I mean, it's really key for us just to kind of concentrate on just power running the football and just wearing them down. I think it's what we need to do. I think it's, I'm kind of repeating myself because I'm saying it's, you know, we should kind of model this game kind of after what the Vandy and Mississippi State look like. The Vandy and Mississippi State games look like in the second half. Just come out and just pound the football and just wear them down. And without defense and a special team, it should, you know, there's no reason why it should not work out in our favor on Saturday night. So I don't know what y'all think, but that's kind of my quick look. You know, that's kind of my quick little take on it.
I think it comes down to line play. I think you're right,
Mr. Morris.
Yeah, I can't argue with that point. Sorry, I'm trying to find a remote to turn the TV off because they're out.
Okay. Well, on that note, Bobcat, if you will rejoin us, we can pull up this week's games that I so diligently helped you pick last night.
Tom, yep.
Taking time out of my family time to help you pick games.
Well, you know, we really got to start remembering to do this at the tailgate because I can pull it up there and we can make the decision then. But it's either that or do it on Sunday, and that hasn't really been happening lately, so...
What are you talking about? I'm sorry. I missed what you said.
No, don't worry about it. Let's go ahead and get started. We got about 14 games to get through, but I think we can blow through them pretty quickly. First up, East Carolina at North Carolina. North Carolina is a 10-point favorite at home.
Oh, my goodness. I'll start off real quick. At North Carolina... I don't know, East Carolina, I thought they'd do better against Vitek a couple weeks ago, and they didn't. 10.5, I haven't been following North Carolina too much since we played them, so I don't know what the status of all their suspensions are. But just on a hunch, North Carolina at home, I said they score a late touchdown and win by more than I'll give the points. I'll take North Carolina.
Yeah, I think UNC has actually looked pretty good all season long, even shorthanded. They lost to Georgia Tech, but there's really no shame in that. And East Carolina lost to Virginia Tech, so I think that pretty much says everything I need to know about them. So I'm going to take North Carolina.
Yeah, I got to say the same thing. I'll go with North Carolina simply because they beat LSU. I mean, not beat LSU, but beat up on LSU pretty much when they were in that first game under man. So I'm going to go with North Carolina.
All right, next one, the big CBS primetime game, Florida at Alabama. Alabama is a 9-point favorite at home.
This is interesting because Alabama coming off a near loss on Saturday. Florida seems to be kind of hitting a stride, not hitting a stride, but they're improving each week like I figured they would. I knew they wasn't going to be as bad as the Miami-Ohio game the whole season. But Alabama's, you know, this is one of those games where I think Nick Saban get his guys up. And the reason why that Arkansas game was as close as it was is maybe because they were looking to that Florida game. But it's a tough one to call. I mean, because I don't know. I think I can see Alabama just blowing the doors off them and beating the crap out of them like they did last year in the SEC championship game. And I can also see Florida continuing to ride that ship and sneaking up on Bama and defeating them. So on a hunch, I'm going to stick with Alabama and say they're going to cover.
I like Alabama. I think they're going to win pretty much every game on their schedule. I think Alabama's the best team in college football. But 9.5, that's a lot of points. And Florida's really good. I think Florida gives them a game. And I'm going to take Florida just to cover, which breaks all sorts of gambling rules. But I'm going to take Florida to cover.
Oh, God. Before I make my official picks on the site, I'm gonna do a little more research on this one. But right now I'm leaning toward Florida to cover, too. Don't know why, I just am.
All right. It happens. Let's see. Next one. This is kind of an embarrassing game, but so be it. Georgia at Colorado. Georgia is a 4.5-point favorite on the road.
I don't know, man. Georgia.
I'll never pick Georgia again. Nope. Done.
Yeah. Good call on it. Could be anything. Yeah, I almost felt bad for picking that one last week, and I was like, oh, got it right. I don't know. Colorado, I don't know about this. Oh, man. Colorado at home. Georgia's getting worse and worse every week. I'm gonna pick the Buffaloes to cover that 4.5. I'll take the points.
I think Colorado's terrible. So as bad as Georgia is playing, I think what's funny about Georgia is it's not that they're playing terrible. It's that it's death by 10,000 paper cuts. They just do everything not well, and it's the little things that are killing them. I think they put it together against a bad Colorado team. So I'm going to take Georgia.
Yeah, but even bad teams have their day every now and then, you know, and playing at Colorado. You know, they're going to make that trip. You know, I don't care what you say. They're still going to be up in that mountain air doing their – in that altitude and everything else. I think Colorado steps up for this game. This is a game that, you know, they're going to look to, you know, make a statement with, and they're going to do it against Georgia.
All right, next one. Kentucky at Ole Miss, who is inexplicably favored in this game by 2 points. I do not understand how Ole Miss – can be favored in an SEC game this year, but
it's a pick 'em game, and they're getting 2.5 of being at home. That's what it boils down to. I want to see Ole Miss continue to lose, so I'm going to pick totally with my heart on this, for no real good reason other than I just want to see Ole Miss continue to lose. I'm going with Kentucky for a second straight week, even though Kentucky did me wrong last week. I'm sticking with the Wildcats.
I actually think Kentucky's a pretty good team. They're still a second division SEC team. Ole Miss, okay, they beat Fresno. That's really no big deal. I cannot believe Ole Miss is favored against anybody. If we ran a gambling pick site, I'd right now be saying Vegas is giving money away. I don't actually believe that because anything can happen, but Kentucky should win this game. They should win going away.
They should, but this is one of those stupid Houston nut coach teams, you know. So just to go against y'all, I'm going to go against y'all. I'm going to say Ole Miss does something crazy and wins a game.
All right. Fighting Akbars.
Yep, crazy, suicidal Houston nut. Who knows what he's going to do. Let's see. Next one's it's on the schedule just because it's a 1-AA. It's a 1A game. Monroe at Auburn. Auburn's 34-point favorite.
I'll give the points. I think Auburn can win this game 49-10. So, no real breaking out about this game. Auburn's getting covered.
Auburn's played one good game this year. I think they're going to take a nap against Monroe. They're still going to win by a lot, but I'll take the 30. I'll take the 35 points. I'll take Monroe.
Monroe is, yeah, I got to give the points. I'll take Auburn in this game. They're just, they're going to run and run again, and they're just going to keep running through that defense of Monroe.
Yeah, Monroe is pretty terrible. I went and looked back. Southeastern did lose that game because of a missed extra point. So, kind of shame for the folks up in Hammond, but oh well. Let's see, next one. At first, I thought this was going to be a 5 a.m. start, but it's actually a 11:30 kick, so it's going to be like 5 p.m. La Tech at Hawaii. Hawaii is a 10-point favorite at home.
How did this one get on here? I guess because we don't play La Tech this year. How did this one get on here, Podcast?
I asked you about it. You said you wanted it on the schedule.
He's dreaming of Hawaii. He's dreaming of Hawaii girls.
I guess. I mean, I don't remember even discussing this one. But,
it was that Hawaiian pineapple promotion.
Anyway, La Tech's on a downward spiral that just Derek Dooley left. I think going to Hawaii is going to cover that 10.5 and win.
Yeah, Hawaii is a tough place to travel to. La Tech's not very good. I don't know a whole lot about them other than their, baby brother kind of status. But just because of the travel, Hawaii.
Yeah, I'll be the first one to admit Hawaii is a tough place to travel to. I tried to get there one time and never made it. So yeah, I'll have to stay Hawaii on this one.
Yeah. All right, next one. The opening round, I believe, in the Commander-in-Chief's Trophy Tournament, Navy at Air Force. Air Force is a 9.5 point favorite at home.
I'm in a giving mood today. I'm going to go ahead and give some more. I'll take Air Force and the points.
Actually, I think Navy's played pretty well this season. The Maryland loss was kind of freakish. They completely outplayed them and somehow just kept turning the ball over. I think Navy's going to come to play against Air Force, and I still think Air Force is going to win, but I'm going to take Navy to cover.
And I'm going to give these points, too. I'm going to take Air Force, especially at home. I mean, no matter how bad how many turnovers they had against Maryland, Maryland's a horrible team. So I can't pick Navy again. Nope.
All right, moving along quickly. Notre Dame at Boston College. Notre Dame is a 2.5 point favorite on the road.
The Catholic Bowl. Which Irish Catholic team is better? I'm gonna go opposite of what I've been doing, which I've been given. I'm gonna go ahead and take Boston College in points on this one. Just because I don't think the Brian Kelly experiment at Notre Dame is gonna work. So I like Boston College.
Boston College lives to beat Notre Dame. This is their entire season, and Notre Dame doesn't really look that good, and they're getting beaten down. I think BC piles on at home. I'm gonna take BC.
Yep, I agree with that. I'll have to take BC too, just because I'm a Boston homer living in Boston, and I just don't want to see Notre Dame win, so I'll take Boston College too.
That's all right. All right, up to Big Ten country, Penn State at Iowa. Iowa is a 7.5 point favorite at home.
I'm going to take the points. I'm going to take Penn State to cover. These Big Ten games, they sluggish, they're slow, they run the ball a lot. I don't know if there's enough high-powered offense for Iowa to cover that 7.5. So I think Penn State keeps it close but doesn't win, but keeps it within that 7.5 point range.
I don't think Penn State's very good this year. I don't think they're terrible, but they're pretty mediocre. I like that Iowa has a senior quarterback. I like that they're playing at home. And also, record for them resets. I still think they're playing for the Big Ten title. I think Iowa's going to come out and make a statement.
Yeah, I agree. I think that loss to Alabama, we really, even though Alabama is daggone good, they just, we realize what Penn State's all about, which is basically nothing this year. Rebuilding, Joe Pa's maybe got one left in him. He's going down. Iowa's going to kick their butt.
All right, now heading out west. Stanford, two undefeated top 10 teams here. Stanford at Oregon. Oregon is a 7.5 point favorite.
Um,
Is this one of those crazy Pac-10 games that's, you know, a decent game but not anywhere on TV because they play so damn late and they have a terrible contract?
It starts at 11:15 local time. It's probably on Versus.
It'll probably be on Fox, right? The late Fox, the late
that's
Fox
terrible.
Game tends to be a Pac-10 game. That's why I watched the last Oregon game.
Oh, man. I don't know, man. Oregon's good. Stanford, I guess we find what Stanford's really made of this year. Going into this game, on a hunch, because I'm not gonna pretend I know anything about these two teams. I like Harbaugh. I like what he's doing at Stanford. Goodness gracious. I'll go Stanford. I think Stanford covers.
I think both these teams are really good. I've seen them both play. I'm a huge believer in Oregon. Then again, Oregon will rip their fans' hearts out late in the year. It's not quite at that point yet. It's a small enough spread where I'm just going to take the team that I think is going to win. So I'm going to take Oregon, but 7.5 is a pretty fair spread.
Oregon, I really think Oregon, if they're ever going to do it, this is their year to take a run at it. You know, not just the Pac-10. I'm talking about the overall. If they're ever going to do it, this will be the year. But, you know, so I think they got to come out strong in this game knowing that, and I think they will. You know, they'll lose to Oregon State later in the year probably just to spite it. But right now, yeah, I think they're going to beat Stanford. I think they're going to beat them handily.
All right, I'll skip over us for a second here and head to the Red River Shootout. Texas, Oklahoma. Oklahoma is a 4.5 point favorite.
Well, just if I'm picking this game based on just what happened last week to Texas, and that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go with Oklahoma to win this game by at least a touchdown. So that being said, it's Oklahoma.
Oklahoma's beaten some really good teams so far. They're quietly having a pretty good year, even though they were kind of sloppy against Cincinnati. Texas has not impressed me. Even forget the UCLA game. Even their wins weren't that impressive. They looked pretty sloppy. I think Oklahoma's going to kill them. I think they're going to beat them by about 20-25 points. It's going to be that kind of game.
Yeah, I think so. Oklahoma's going to whoop up on Texas. Texas has no identity, none whatsoever. Their offense is just as bad as ours. I mean, it's just bad. I watched part of that game late the other night when I got home. I caught part of that replay. It was horrible. I couldn't even watch it. So, yeah, I think Oklahoma's going to roll in us.
All right, next up, Vanderbilt's opportunity to completely and utterly destroy the Big East once and for all. They travel to Connecticut. Connecticut is a 7.5-point favorite at home.
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I just can't pick Vanderbilt. I'll go with Connecticut.
I feel bad because I was hyping up Connecticut preseason, and that's kind of left an egg on my face. They look like a bad football team, but it is Vanderbilt. Connecticut's playing at home. Surely they're going to salvage their season. I got to take UConn.
Yeah, especially playing in Connecticut. I mean, we know Vanderbilt, God, they just have nothing. They have absolutely nothing. They're a bad football team. UConn does have a couple of playmakers up there if they ever get rolling. So I got to take UConn, too, in this.
All right. Another Big Ten matchup on the list. Wisconsin at Michigan State. Both teams are still undefeated. Wisconsin is a 2.5-point favorite. It should be said that Michigan State's coach will be coaching from the booth this week because he's still recovering from that heart attack he had after beating Notre Dame.
What a call, by the way.
Yeah, that was fantastic. That was fantastic. I'm okay if the play clock was at zero. That was fantastic. Anyway, on that note, I like Wisconsin in this game. They seem to always do well in these big spots against all the Big Ten teams, and I like Wisconsin to go out to East Lansing and win this football game.
I'm always a big fan of Wisconsin. I think they have a really good program, and Michigan State really hasn't beaten anybody outside of Notre Dame. Wisconsin's tested. Arizona State was a tough game for them. I think Wisconsin's going to win this mainly because they're better.
I think so too. But I'd like to. That's one Big Ten team I would like to go see a game in their stadium, because I heard some of the traditions at Wisconsin are great just to look at. But anyway, that's just on a sidebar. But yeah, and the fact that I can't stand Michigan State Stadium because you feel like you're right on top of it, even on the TV. Michigan State's coming back to reality this week. They're going to get beat bad.
All right, and finally, us, Tennessee at LSU. LSU is a 14.5 point favorite.
You said 17?
14.
14.
Okay, 14. 14. 14 showing right here. All right, based on our putrid offense, 14.5 is too many. I like Tennessee to cover that 14.5.
You know, I really want to say Tennessee's going to cover, but the trend of this season has so far been to beat out-of-conference schools by narrow margins and absolutely crush bad SEC teams. And Tennessee is probably worse than Mississippi State. So I think it's going to be ugly. We're not going to – at the end of the game, no one's going to believe that we did it. But I think we're going to win by 20 points again. So
okay.
LSU, the cover.
It's a fair assessment. I was thinking along the same lines, and I wasn't sure which way I wanted to go, but then I started then you put in my head the whole 27-3 lifetime series record against us, and I started thinking about that. But, you know, I could possibly change this pick by the end of the week. So, but as of now, I'm going with Tennessee to cover.
Okay,
sorry,
well,
Patrick, go ahead.
Yeah, you're going. I'm going against you there because I think you know, our defense is going to score one time. We know special teams is going to do something. There's 14 right there. All we got to do is get another turnover in field position. Josh Bassett kicks one at 17. We beat the spread. We win. Easy.
Okay, well, piss on. I'm a follower. I'm going to change it right now. It's already changed. It's already saved. So. Anyway, okay, I guess it wraps it up. Okay, I guess I got to close on the show now.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
That was smooth, I got to tell you. I get better every week as the season progresses, I got to tell you. But anyway, well, that does it for our picks. Again, you listen to the show. If you want to, you can jump in. You can jump into the Go Show Pick'em Challenge if you want to, even though you haven't been playing this playing the whole year. It's still fun to do the games against everybody, and you can still see how you're doing week to week, and not so much worry about the overall standing, which I'm moving up, by the way. 7-7 moved me up 11 spots, so I'm pretty pumped about that. So I'm getting better. So. Yeah, and I guess it means everybody else is getting worse. Because 7-7 shouldn't move you up 9-10 spots, but it did. But anyway, on that note, that will wrap it up for us tonight on your midweek Go Show. Again, you will hear this show probably tomorrow night or Thursday, depending on when you have time to go and download it. Again, you can access it from the site. You can download it to your iPod. You know, go that route. Again, if you want to visit the site, andthevalleychick.com, continuous coverage of Tennessee all week long. Our polls are in the boys over there by podcast as well, Billy, Paul, all those guys. Again, you're going to hear us Saturday morning, bright and early, roughly around 8:30 a.m., tailgating and streaming live on the webcast in a full Go Show Team Cat breakdown in the only manner that we can do it, early on a Saturday morning. So join us for that. If you're out there that early in the morning, come stop by and say hi. Be a part of the show. And punch Marvin a chase in the face, too, while you're at it. So that'll work out just fine. So, podcast, thank you for always just being you. And Tozer and Patrick, thank you all as well for chiming in tonight. You made my job a lot easier. I didn't have to talk as much. Just with y'all two heads, y'all two very opinionated. So it works out just fine. So good show tonight. And we'll see y'all on Saturday, as always. Go Tigers.
All right. Go Tigers.